Well, it'll be hard to ever forget, really, the images of the tsunami that hit Southeast Asia on Boxing Day 2004, or the east coast of Japan 2 years ago. And we've all wondered the same thing. What's the risk for Australia's coastline? The ANU's Stephen Roberts has some answers. Tonight he'll be discussing how the latest mathematical modelling helps councils and governments better understand the potential threat posed by tsunamis and flooding. Stephen Roberts, good morning. Welcome to Breakfast.
Hi, Fran.
Stephen, I think most of us feel here in Australia we are away from the major earthquake zones and so at little risk of tsunami. Is that right to think that?
Well, thank goodness, yes. We obviously aren't in such a bad position as Indonesia or Japan, but there still is some risk. The Geoscience Australia Bureau of Met have a tsunami warning system, and they're able to tell us whether we might be hit by a tsunami, which might have been initiated around Australia, south of New Zealand, north of New Zealand, south of Indonesia. These are all places which can initiate a tsunami that can actually hit the Australian coast.
Where are the highest risk areas of Australia?
Northwestern Australia is the highest risk. There's a subduction zone which is just south of Java, which is sort of positioned to hit just on the western side of northwestern northwest shelf.
But where does that put us? Is that Broome area?
Sort of around that sort of area, yes. Luckily, though, we're not sitting right on top of the subduction zone, so those horrendous sort of 30-metre and higher waves that Indonesia got in the Boxing Day tsunami, we wouldn't get those sorts of waves.
Would they be?
The actual risk that Geosciences Australia has calculated is that within 1,000 years, there's a chance of a 4-metre wave hitting the northwest shelf. So it's unlikely, but it will happen, I guess.
What sort of damage does a 4-metre wave do? And if we're only talking the northwest shelf, we're not talking the east coast where our major capitals are.
Well, obviously, a 4-metre wave, you don't want to be in the way of a 4-metre wave. That's catastrophic. There would be chances of smaller waves. There have been waves that have inundated up to 200 metres inland along that coast. But literally, if you look at the historical record that we have records for, mm-hmm. there's only been about 50 recorded tsunamis around the coast of Australia. And indeed, that a 2-metre wave was the maximum, and a 200-metre inundation was the maximum that's been observed. There are historical records that people have assumed have been the result of larger tsunamis, and that's possible. There are the sort of tsunamis I'm talking about are the ones that are produced when one tectonic plate is subducting under another, and they're the ones that cause the very big and widespread tsunamis, the one in Japan and the one in Indonesia, Boxing Day. But there are other ones. Basically, you can get underwater submarine landslides, which cause very local tsunamis, but can cause very large tsunamis. There was a catastrophic tsunami on the north coast of New Guinea back in the 90s, and that actually caused 2,000 deaths, but was very localised, literally within only about 30 kilometres of the actual zone where this underwater landslide occurred.
So you're talking to us about experiences we've seen and witnessed in the region. You're a mathematician, and you're doing mathematical modelling to look at the risk of tsunami and the impact of that here. How do you go about getting a mathematical model of the risk of tsunami?
Well, like you've just mentioned, these things don't happen that often, and that, of course, makes it very hard to really understand what the overall risk is going to be, literally how many people will die or how much property will be lost. So, first of all, it's actually very useful to have mathematical models to sort of fill that gap, to actually run many simulations to get a feel for what the actual range of the risk is. So for the risk map of Australia, you can look it up on a Geosciences tsunami site. There's a map basically showing the risk right around Australia, where there's 4 meter at Northwest Shelf, 1 meter at Hobart, these sorts of things. And that was done running 50,000 simulations of tsunamis generated artificially from all the zones around the coast, around the subduction zones that encircle Australia. So the mathematical models is based usually on physical models. So basically the sort of thing you might have learnt in physics at high school. Conservation of mass, conservation of momentum, Newton's second law, these sorts of things. From those, you derive a sets of equations that actually work amazingly well to represent the fluid flows that you get with tsunamis. And then from that, you have to put them onto computers and run very large simulations to basically understand what sort of inundation you might get from any particular scenario.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. It's 28 past 8. Our guest this morning is Dr. Stephen Roberts from the Mathematical Sciences Institute with ANU at ANU, and we're having this conversation because this year has been declared Mathematics and Planet, the year of Mathematics and Planet Earth, and there's conferences around the world going on around this theme. Stephen, talking about sets of equations and Newton's second law, you're also been looking at flooding and looking at climate change and the possibility that rare flooding events could be more frequent. What's your mathematical work showing about these possibilities for major unexpected floods?
Well, amazingly, the equations that you use for tsunami modelling are nearly identical to the ones you use for flooding. So that's the amazing thing about, I guess, mathematics. You can abstract different physical situations and end up with the same equations and use the same techniques. The flooding... The problem there, of course, is that a lot of our infrastructure has been built around some assumptions about how high the tides will be and how high a storm surge may be. Mm. But unfortunately, you just change that a little bit. You change the ocean height by a meter, which is the prediction for the end of this century, and storm surges that would cause hardly any effect basically become large events.
So the assumptions are wrong.
Areas. The assumptions are changing, that's right.
Are changing. So do you think our authorities, our local government, state government, federal government authorities, should be more on the ball in terms of updating the assumptions and going to people like you to get remodelled?
Oh, indeed, they should all come to me, that's right. but basically the government, I mean, the government does know this and local governments know this. They are trying to redo their calculations, but it's over time... Maybe expertise within different areas has been lost, and so it's actually pretty hard for a local council now to within house to run a whole new swag of simulations. In fact, I am one of the developers of an open source flood model, a thing called Anuga, and our hope is that some of those councils might be able to take up the Anuga code and do some of their simulations in house. But that's it's a big task to it is still a technical task to do these simulations. So I think government does know, but it's going to be a hard task to get all the simulations that we need to really understand what's going to happen. And then, you know, it's very difficult to run some simulations and find that a new area is going to be flood prone and people have houses there, and there's a lot of politics that's involved in this as well.
Stephen, thank you very much for joining us on Breakfast.
Thank you.
Dr. Stephen Roberts from the Mathematical Sciences Institute at ANU. And his talk, How Computational Mathematics Helps to Model the Impacts of Floods and Tsunamis, is on this afternoon at the ANU at 5:30. It's all part of this international year dedicated to mathematics and planet Earth. It's 28 to 9 on Breakfast.